It was a grand and glorious sight. Accompanying the torch on its long journey has been an official declaration written by Maya Angelou, whom we are honored to have as a member of our commission. Each runner in the torch relay has signed this official declaration, known as to form a more perfect union. Maya Angelou will now read her declaration.
We American women view our history with equanimity. We allow the positive achievement to inspire us and the negative omissions to teach us. We recognize the accomplishments of our sisters, those famous and hallowed women of history, and those unknown and unsung women whose strength have given birth to our strength. We recognize those women who were and are immobilized by oppression and crippled by prejudice. We recognize that no nation can boast of balance until each member of that nation is equally employed and equally rewarded. We recognize that women collectively have been unfairly treated and dishonorably portrayed. We recognize our responsibility to work toward the eradication of negatives in our society, and by so doing, bring honor to our gender, to our species, and to ourselves individually. Because of the recognition set down above, we American women unfold our future today. We promise to accept nothing less than justice for every woman. We pledge to work unsparingly to bring fair play to every public arena and to encourage honorable behavior in each private home. We promise to develop courage so that we may learn from our colleagues, and patience that we may teach our opponents. Because we are women, because we are strong, because we are honorable and wish to be noble, we will discharge those responsibilities.
Commissioners, friends, and honored guests, I am proud to present the First Lady of the United States, Rosalynn Carter. a great pleasure for me to be here today and to welcome you to the National Women's Conference on behalf of the Carter administration. Jim is sorry that he couldn't be here today. He's concerned about the outcome of this conference. He cares what happens here. And I wanted to come and be with you. In fact, I wouldn't have missed it for anything. And I trust that you're not going to say, he sent a woman to do a man's job. And I want to talk about that for a minute. This substance of this conference is much more than a man-woman thing or symbolism. And we want the whole country to know that. We in the White House hear all kind of talk today about style and substance. And I think they go together. And I think the two first ladies that we have on the stage here today with me are a good indication that style and substance do go together. Ms. Johnson, you left behind a national legacy. Beauty, trees, flowers, plants that literally bloom with the season. You inspired us all by your style, being out, planting things, planting trees, a tulip library, working together with people. You made communities and people conscious of their surroundings. And you made them want to take pride in the environment around them. We thank you for that. And Mrs. Ford, your courageous, yes, your outspoken acceptance of your illness prompted untold numbers of men and women to seek help and information about cancer. You brought hope and alleviated fears and left an imprint in the White House by your enthusiastic style. Both of you are admired throughout the whole world. And I think that it is very significant that the three of us are here today in Houston together on this platform to affirm the continuity in our government's efforts to improve life for all. Jimmy asked me to be his personal emissary today and to talk to you briefly about his concerns and his goals. He and I have been partners for a long time. We've worked together and we've worked separately to raise our children, to start a business, to undertake the duties of elective office, and to try to fulfill the commitment that we share together to improve the lives and to bring happiness to the women and the men of our country. Did you know that the General Counsel of the Department of Defense is a woman? The General Counsel of the Department of Agriculture is a woman from Texas. There are two women in the cabinet, four women ambassadors, one out of every four professionals on Jimmy's domestic policy staff is female, a top woman advises him on the National Security Council. These are building blocks. Also, Jimmy this week sent a message to all the departments and agencies directing them to enforce the executive order that was signed 10 years ago by President Johnson banning sex discrimination in federal employment. I'm proud to be part of this National Women's Conference. Never before in our history has there been such a women's meeting in numbers, in preparation, in diversity, in long-range effect. The range of opinion, ethnic group, income, occupations represented here reflect our whole country. This diversity among women is an indication of how completely we are a part of America. The strength of our country from its very beginning has been the wide variety of people and ideas that have worked together for the good of us all. There have been a lot of disagreements and conflicts. There will be a lot of disagreements and conflicts. But I agree with my daughter-in-law, Judy, that we must guard against obscuring valid issues with defensiveness and anger. The glue that holds us together is the knowledge that our basic goals are the same. All of us cherish our freedom to live, to worship, to vote, to work as we please. We are all searching for ways to create a better future for our children. Here in Houston, we have that chance. And we must consider carefully our responsibilities. We are responsible to the American people who, through their taxes, have supported this conference. We are responsible to the hundreds of thousands of women who attended the state meetings in good faith. We're responsible to the Congress and the President, who will use the report generated here by this conference for many years to come in their efforts to solve the problems that will be identified and discussed here. Above all, we are responsible to ourselves and the future generation of American women and men, because we are making history. I think we all know that we are making history as we come together here in this huge gathering. We share a great privilege these next few days. Thank you very much. It's my special privilege and honor to introduce to you Commissioner Betty Ford.
We all appreciate all that applause, but we have to get on with our business. Wonderful, absolutely thrilling to see such a tremendous crowd here this morning. The rafters are filled, and I want everybody in the world to know it. Mrs. Carter, Mrs. Johnson, and all of you who are here, in behalf of the IWY, the first thing I'd like to say is that I'm honored by the company I'm with. It points up dramatically the common causes and hopes of so many people of many different persuasions. I told Jerry I was determined to go to Houston and have my voice heard. Jerry answered saying, "Well, naturally, okay, Betty, I expected it." Well, that lighthearted change really has a serious side for Jerry and for me. We have both found a great deal of respect and appreciation in knowing that each of us can speak our own minds as we feel necessary. Jerry does send his warmest regards and certainly best wishes for this conference. I'm sure a great deal of you perhaps have read about Amelia Bloomer and perhaps know who she was. Well, it was way back in the 1800s that Amelia Bloomer designed the divided skirt. Now, some of you may also recall that my maiden name, if you'll pardon the expression, was also Bloomer. We haven't had time to determine for sure that we are relatives, but I don't think there are very many of us around. However, if she came up with the idea of pants for women, she sounds like my kind of gal. Very seriously, I am proud to be here, and I am very honored by the privilege to participate with each and every one of you. In terms of advice, let me say this. We must keep focused on our goal in business, in education, employment, politics, or in the home. We can have different interests, but we shouldn't be dismayed by the clash of opinions and ideas. It has been said, the quote, "evils of controversy will pass, but its benefits are permanent." Thank you again for having me here. I'm proud to be a part of it. So let's keep it all together. Thank you.
She has led this commission to this point in time and this place in history. She will tell us how this conference has happened and how it came into being. And as I present to her the official gavel for this meeting at which she will preside, I wish to say one comment about this gavel. This gavel was used by Susan B. Anthony in 1896. Washington, D.C. It was presented to her by the suffrage delegates to the convention of the National American Woman Suffrage Association. This gavel has been loaned to this historic meeting here in Houston, Texas, by the Smithsonian Institution, the Division of Political History. Bella, may you preside with the true spirit of what this gavel means to American women who are again on the move.
We've waited almost 2 years for this moment, and I think by what has been happening here these last few days and what will happen here that is well worth it. The road to Houston started more than a century and a half ago when American women began organizing to win the right to citizenship. The torch of freedom has been handed from generation to generation of women, and the torch we see here today is a symbol of our past victories and our hopes for future ones. The road has twisted and turned, gone down byways, and made detours at times. But today we're on the high road to equality. Our present journey started with a bill, Public Law 94167, introduced in Congress not only by myself, but with the co-sponsorship of most of the members of the Congress who are women, with Congresswoman Patsy Mink and Margaret Heckler especially, and all of the other members of the Congress united around the bill, speaking for it and fighting for it. A small number of congressmen were disturbed at the idea of so many women getting together to discuss and act on our common concerns and problems. So they objected to spending money on us, even though the cost averaged out to about a nickel for each woman in this country. But we persisted, and our bill passed overwhelmingly. It was signed by President Ford, and then the women took over. Our conference is the first in many ways. It is the first time that the federal government has sponsored a national women's conference, and the 50 state meetings and 6 territorial meetings that preceded this event. It is the first time that the Congress and the President have mandated American women to identify and help remove the barriers that stand between us and full equality with men. The mandate under which we meet does not tell us to consider whether women should seek to end discrimination or should seek full equality, full citizenship, and full participation in society. Instead, it takes a stand for equality, a position that I believe has the support of a majority of Americans. The law under which we meet is rooted in the belief that men and women should share equally in the rights, responsibilities, and opportunities that our democracy offers. How could it be otherwise, 200 years after our nation has been born in the great struggle for the rights of the individual? And so the law directs us to examine the past and the present. It directs us to examine the status of American women, our needs, our problems, and the diversity of our lives. It directs us to seek change and improvement in the lives of women who have been held back by discriminatory practices. This is our mission this weekend. We will be debating and voting on a national plan of action that includes dozens of recommendations on ways in which equality between men and women can be made a living reality. Many of us see a future in which women will be free to live and work as individuals, as members of families, as members of society, without the constraints of narrow customs and prejudices that demean our self-worth and worth, or laws that treat us as inferiors or weaklings. Some among us may prefer a future that simply continues the past. Our purpose is not to tell women how to live or what to do. It is simply to say that women must be free to choose what they do. Let us agree to disagree if we must. It would be a dull weekend if we didn't feel free to state our beliefs. But I hope all of us here will remember our common interest as women who have for too long been treated as merely auxiliary human beings. I am proud of the work of the National Commission, which has reached out to women all over the country in the past year, from Alaska to Florida, from Maine to California, from Michigan to Texas, from America, Samoa, and Hawaii to Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. More than 130,000 women have met together, have discovered each other, have learned, have argued, have agreed and disagreed, and celebrated not only our past, but a new birth of consciousness that helps us understand the way we live now and the way we can live in the future. The National Plan of Action we shall be discussing comes from you, from the state meetings, from the members of the National Commission. It reflects the breadth of your concerns and the needs and interests. The largest number of resolutions adopted at the state meetings were on employment, education, and health, and you also expressed concern with the needs of homemakers, older women, disabled women, battered women, rural women, women in prison, women on welfare, women in business, in the media, in the arts, and the humanities. Your resolutions proposed ways to increase the number of women in elective and appointive office, and to strengthen the role of women in the continuing struggle for world peace and disarmament. Your resolutions dealt with child care, with child abuse, with rape, the right to reproductive freedom, the rights of minority women, and the right to sexual preference. A majority of the states called for final ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment. Which has already been approved by the Congress, 35 state legislatures, and has had the support of 6 presidents and many of the first ladies we all know, and a majority of Americans. The scope of these resolutions, as synthesized in the proposed National Plan of Action, shows your awareness of the changing status of women in our society, particularly as it affects the two largest groups of women, homemakers and working women. We know, in fact, that most women fill both these roles at some time in their lives. Throughout the history of our nation, women have worked, but today more women than ever before are working. Many are housewives who work part-time or on night shifts to help pay the mortgage and the grocery bills. Many work to support themselves and their children, or work because they are single women, divorced, or widowed. But despite the fact that women compose 40% of the workforce, the wage gap between men and women gets wider, not smaller. A woman with a college education still earns less on average than a man with a high school education, and minority women earn less than their white women. Housewives, or homemakers if you prefer, earn nothing at all. Though this nation could not function for a day if the millions of women who work exclusively in the home were to stop doing what they do so lovingly for their families. No objective value is placed on their sun-up to sundown labor. And the result is that homemakers are placed at a serious disadvantage in inheritance and in Social Security laws, in divorce and separation and custody cases. In some states, a widow loses all right to any share of the family estate if her husband leaves her out of his will. In one state, a husband still controls his wife's earnings. In practically all states, women have no way to enforce the tort laws when husbands refuse to take financial responsibility for their families, contrary to the popular belief that most divorce settlements do something for women. The fact is, most divorce settlements are meager and short-lived. Yesterday, whether Houston was going to be the death of the women's movement. Well, look at us. We are a multitude. We are alive and kicking, and we shall get even livelier, I'm sure of that, before this is all over. After